chapter 18. 1 Kings chapter 18. We'll read verses 30 through verse 40. And Elijah said unto all the people, "Come near unto me." And all the people came near unto him, and he repaired the altar of the Lord that was broken down. Elijah took 12 stones, according to the number of the tribes of the sons of Jacob, unto whom the word of the Lord came, saying, "Israel shall be thy name." And with the stones he built an altar in the name of the Lord. He made a trench about the altar, as great as would contain 2 measures of seed. And he put the wood in order, cut the bullock in pieces, laid him, the bullock, on the wood, and said, "Fill 4 barrels with water," and poured on the burnt sacrifice and on the wood. And he said, "Do it the second time," and they did it the second time. And he said, "Do it the third time," and they did it the third time. And the water ran round about the altar, and he filled the trench also with water. And it came to pass at the time of the offering of the evening sacrifice that Elijah the prophet came near and said, "Lord God of Abraham, Isaac, and of Israel, let it be known this day that thou art God in Israel, and I am thy servant, and that I have done all these things at thy word. Hear me, O Lord, hear me, that this people may know that thou art the Lord God, and that thou hast turned their hearts back again. Then the fire of the Lord fell, and consumed the burnt sacrifice, and the wood, and the stones, and the dust, and licked up the water that was in the trench. And all the people saw it, they fell on their faces, and they said, 'The Lord, he is the God, the Lord, he is the God.' And Elijah said unto them, 'Take the prophets of Baal, let not one of them escape.' And they took them, and Elijah brought them down into the brook of Kishon, and slew them there." What we have here is the historical account of Elijah on Mount Carmel, confronting 850 false prophets. And there's a great host of people. It was a day and an event to be remembered. One of the many dramatic acts in the history of Israel, and the most memorable event in Elijah's ministry. What we read here is one of those accounts that Paul made reference to in Romans 15. And verse 4, "For whatsoever things were written aforetime were written for our learning, that through patience and comfort of the Scriptures we might have hope." In our text, Elijah is pleading with God that God would manifest himself in such a illustrious and convincing way, to manifest himself in a powerful and miraculous way, so much so that it could not be denied by any that it was God, that it was a work of God. So he's pleading for a manifestation of God, that all would recognize God for who he is. And that's what we want to speak on this morning, the seeking a obvious, miraculous manifestation of God. It's what we need. It's what the United States needs. It's what every one of us stand in need of. First of all, we just want to set the stage of the scene. The event takes place back in verse 19 and 20 on Mount Carmel, which was a mountain range located in the land that had been allocated to the tribe of Issachar. It was along the shores of the Mediterranean Sea, which answers the question of where they got the water. It was a place that was so situated that people could come from all parts of the kingdom without too much difficulty. The background leading up to the event, Elijah, of course, ministered in the northern kingdom of Israel. He did so during the reign of Ahab. He was the seventh king in a succession of wicked kings over the kingdom of Israel. You see, when the nation was divided, the people of the northern kingdom, they had departed from the Lord. Beginning with the reign of their very first king, the reign of Jeroboam. And this departure from God simply escalated and intensified, leading into the reign of Ahab, who was the very incarnation of evil. And we see what he did back there in 1 Kings 16, verses 31 through 33, the building the altars of Baal. And Ahab's influence, coupled with that of his wife, Jezebel, was really a blight unto the whole kingdom. And now the kingdom is in a very deplorable spiritual condition. The altars of God have been torn down. Images of Baal and Ashtaroth are everywhere. Everywhere are the signs of Baal. The northern kingdom had sunk into the depths of spiritual decay. And spiritual darkness reigns throughout the land. In chapter 17 and verse 1, Elijah, the prophet of God, appears before wicked King Ahab, and he declares to him that judgment would fall upon the land, that there would be no dew, that there would be no rain for years. And this was a result of departure from God. During this time of drought, during this time of famine, God, of course, would sustain Elijah. He did so there at the brook of Cherith. He did so in the city of Zarephath. We read of that in 1 Kings chapter 17. In the third year of the drought, 3 years, over 3 years, it was in the third year, no dew, no rain, God instructs Elijah in chapter 18 and verse 1 to again go to Ahab. This time he was to go with this message: I will send rain upon the earth. From chapter 18 and verse 2, we see the famine was sore. That is, you can only imagine, 3 years with no dew, no rain. The famine was very severe, it was very painful. People were suffering terribly. It was while Elijah was on his way to Ahab that Ahab calls his governor, a man by the name of Obadiah, a man whom God in his providence had placed in the cabinet of Ahab. We read of Obadiah that he feared the Lord greatly. Because of his fear of God, he secretly sustained 100 prophets of God in 2 separate caves. But anyway, Elijah's on his way to Ahab, and Ahab says to Obadiah in verse 5, "We have to find some water. We have to find some grass for the horses and the mules. Because if we don't, they're going to die like the rest of our beasts. Now, it's interesting that Ahab was more concerned about his horses than he was his people. But there's a message there also. And in verse 6, we see Ahab goes one way in search of water and grass, and Obadiah goes the other. It was a very dire situation. And in verse 7, Elijah meets Obadiah in the way. Providence of God. And he says to Obadiah, go tell Ahab that Elijah is here. In verse 16, Obadiah goes to Ahab, and then Ahab goes out to meet Elijah. So there they are, Ahab and Elijah for the second time. Verse 17, Ahab immediately accuses Elijah. He says, you are the problem. You are the reason that we are suffering. And then, of course, Elijah sets him straight and says, no, you are the problem. And he gives the reason, in that ye have forsaken the commandments of the Lord and has followed Balaam. And then in verse 19, Elijah, no doubt by the direction of God, issues a challenge to Ahab. And that just gives us a brief background leading up to this event. So let's consider the setting and the scene upon Mount Carmel. The event, of course, takes place against the backdrop of apostasy, idolatry, wickedness, immorality, and abomination. Following the challenge of Elijah, notice verse 20. So Ahab sent unto all the children of Israel and gathered the prophets together unto Mount Carmel. You can picture the scene. There's no doubt thousands of people. There is Ahab and his entourage and their proud wickedness. There are 850 false prophets, agents of Satan. And they're there in their abominable defiance and irreverence of God. And then there are the people, ordinary people of Israel, a people who had departed from God, a people who had departed from God's ways, a people that had been duped and drawn into the ways of Baal. And there they are. They're looking for solutions and remedies. They're looking for deliverance. They're looking for peace. They're looking for answers. They're looking for solutions to their problems. Looking for that which will better their lives. But they're looking in the lies and the deceits of Baal. So you look at that crowd that's gathered at Mount Carmel. And it's a picture of spiritual blindness. It's a picture of spiritual ignorance. And I'm sure that the people assembled that day in great eagerness, thinking perhaps that they were about to witness the miracle of long hoped for rain. That perhaps Elijah would pray and their sufferings would come to an end. So you see that crowd. But you notice over here somewhere, there's something else. From verse 30, we see there's the broken down altar of God. The altar was the place of confession. It was a place of contrition. and it was broken down. It was a place of where one would meet with God. The place of prayer, the place of fellowship with God. And it's broken down. It's no longer. It was a place of dying to self. It was a place of yielding. It was a place of surrender and consecration unto the Lord. And it's broken down. It was a place of worship and praise. It's no more. It's broken down. So you look at that broken altar, and it's a solemn witness that God's people had departed from God. So that's the scene. You have this mass of people, but you cannot lose sight that over here is that altar that once was. But it's broken down. And that brings us to the actual event. The first thing that happens, verse 21, people had gathered, and here comes Elijah. And the first people he speaks to is that general population of Israel that had gathered that day. And he looks at them and he says, "How long halt ye between two opinions?" What's he doing? Well, he has just revealed their problem. Their problem is not that there hasn't been any dew or rain for over 3 years. That's not the problem. They think it is. But that's really not the real problem. The real problem was their spiritual condition. How long halt ye between two opinions? He was revealing to them their need. He's looking at a people that were of a divided allegiance. He's looking at a people who were disobedient. He's looking at a people that were indifferent. Oh, these people, they enjoyed their title, the people of God. They enjoyed that. But on the other hand, they loved the sensual and fleshly appeal of Baal worship. You see, they had been drawn by, and they were now under the power and the influence and the sway of the carnal. Again, they enjoyed the title, the people of God. But they also craved the approval and the favor of Ahab and Jezebel. They had been taught to worship God only. They had been taught to walk in God's ways, to follow His paths. They had been taught to have no other gods before the God of heaven. Jezebel comes along, introduces Baal worship, and they have this fear of God, so they don't want to let go of God entirely, thinking that He might strike them dead. But they don't want to let go of Baal either, because that pleased their flesh. They enjoyed Baal worship. So what do? Well, they do what God's people do. They try to fit both into their lives. And the result of that was that the altar of God was broken down, and the altars of Baal were established throughout the land. Even amongst God's people of that day, the worship of Baal was popular. It was widespread. And the worship of God was unpopular and all but gone. So Elijah is looking at a people who had vacillated in their sentiments and conduct. trying to accommodate themselves to both God and Baal, trying to secure the favor of both. The result, the altars of God are broken down. Here is a people that were half-hearted. They were undecided. They're unconcerned. They are torn between conflicting ideas, between conflicting philosophies and ways of thinking. And as a result, the altar of God is broken down. And they have no peace. They have no comfort. They have no joy. And their lives are filled with confusion and turmoil. The truth is, Elijah was on Mount Carmel that day, not for the 850 false prophets. He was on Mount Carmel that day for all those Israelites who had divided allegiance. So the first thing that takes place, Elijah says, how long? Halt ye between two opinions. How long, he says, are you going to totter? How long are you going to go back and forth between God and Baal? How long? It's been nearly 3.5 years. No rain has fallen. Your cattle are dead. Your fields are parched. Your land is covered with dust. How long are you going to continue in your wavering between God and Baal? He's trying to reason with a people who by this time were unreasonable. And then Elijah insists upon a clear distinction. He says, if the Lord be God, follow Him, which means you have to forsake Baal. But if Baal be God, then follow Him. In other words, make up your mind. Get on one side or the other. You're either on God's side or you're on Baal's side. You cannot be between. On the one side, there is that which has been proven to you to be unsatisfying. You're in famine. There is that which is proven to be empty, that which ends in sorrow and disappointment and drought and famine. And on the other side is the God who loved you, the God who chose you and redeemed you from Egypt, and who had miraculously provided for you. He said, how long are you going to halt between two opinions? The response of the people. And the people answered him not a word. They answered him not a word. And then Elijah turns and he challenges the prophets of Baal. In verse 22, as introductory to his challenge of the false prophets, he calls attention to the odds. He said unto the people, I only remain a prophet. Now, that wasn't true. He thought it was. There were the 200 that Obadiah had sustained. There were the 7,000 that God had hit. But at that day in Mount Carmel, Elijah was the only one. So he calls attention to the odds. And then in verse 23 and 24, he issues a challenge to the false prophets. He tells them, after he issues this challenge, you go first. And they choose their bullock. They place it upon the altar of Baal. And in verse 26 it says, they called on the name of Baal from morning, probably 9 o'clock, even until noon, about 3 hours. Saying, O Baal, hear us. But notice, there was no voice nor any that answered. And the prophets of Baal becoming more desperate. In verse 26 says, they leaped upon the altar which was made. And they continued to cry out, Baal, Baal, send down fire upon this sacrifice. Then they began to, in verse 28, they began to cut themselves after their manner. That is, this was part of Baal worship. They began to cut themselves with knives and lancets till the blood gushed out of them. They're desperate, crying out to a God who would not hear. The noon hour passed, and they continued. And in verse 29, we read, there was neither voice, nor any to answer, nor any that regarded. Then Elijah, he says, okay, that's enough. You've had your turn. In verse 30, he said unto all the people, come near unto me. Again, he's mostly talking to the general population of Israel that had gathered. So they draw closer unto Elijah. By this time, Elijah is standing over by where the broken altar of the Lord was. And it says, and all the people came near to him. And after the people gathered, he repaired the altar of the Lord that was broken down. He took those 12 stones representing the 12 tribes of Israel and began to rebuild the altar of the Lord. And that should have pierced the hearts of all of those Israelites as they watched Elijah pick up a large stone and place it over here, and then another, and rebuild that altar. It ought to pierce their hearts. But it didn't do anything. What Elijah's doing here, he's showing them what they needed to get back to. He is saying, you need to get back to this altar. You need to get back to the altar of God. This people needed more than a reminder from Elijah. They needed a manifestation from God. So it is today. Overall, people need more than a reminder. It's not going to do it. I mean, watching Elijah rebuild that altar, it didn't do anything to these people. They needed more than that. They had sunk so low. After the altar had been rebuilt, verse 32, he made a trench, began to dig a ditch about the altar, as great as would contain 2 measures of seed, which is 1/3 of a bushel, or about 13 quarts of seed. And then in verse 33, it says that he put the wood in order. He cut the bullock in pieces, laid the bullock upon the wood, and then he issued a very strange order. Fill 4 barrels with water and pour it on the burnt sacrifice. Pour it on the wood. Verse 34, this was done 3 times. 12 barrels of water poured upon the sacrifice in the wood, filling the trench. The reason for all of this. Why did Elijah do that? It was so that when God acted, Elijah had no doubt that God would do what he did. And he wanted it to be so obvious that when God acted, everybody would know. God did that. Elijah didn't do this. This is God. No doubt. He wanted there to be no doubt that this was all of God. In verse 36, about 3 o'clock in the afternoon, Elijah steps forth. He begins to pray. And he prays that God would manifest himself in such a way that he would be glorified. He says, "Let it be known this day that thou art God." You know, think about that prayer. That's a good prayer. I mean, that covers everything. You pray for the lost soul. Lord, just let them know you're God. That pretty much covers it. You pray for someone in need. Lord, let it be known that you're God. That's what we need today. And that's what Elijah prayed. He's praying that God would manifest himself in such a way that the people would know him. Notice verse 37. That this people may know that thou art God. And he's talking about the general population there. How long halt ye between two opinions? Oh God, cause them to know that you are God. He's praying that God would manifest in such a way that their hearts would be turned back to God. Verse 37. That thou hast turned their heart back again. Elijah just asking them the question, how long halt ye between two opinions? If God be God, follow him. If Baal be God, follow him. That didn't turn their hearts. The people watching Elijah rebuild that altar, that didn't turn their hearts. What was it that was going to turn their hearts? A manifestation that God is God. Requires no less today. Then we read in verse 38, then the fire of the Lord fell. To the amazement of all, other than Elijah. This was a supernatural fire. We see that from several things. First of all, it descended from above. And the fire of the Lord fell. Then it consumed the pieces of the sacrifice and then the wood in which it had been laying. The order making it clear that it was not. Why did he consume the sacrifice before he consumed the wood? That order makes it clear that that bullock was burnt. The source was not the wood. The source was God. And then God consumed that soaked wood. And it says that it had a direct impact, that fire had a direct impact upon the sacrifice, the wood, but it also says it consumed the stones. That's supernatural fire. And consumed the stones and the dust and the water in the trench. There was a manifestation of the consuming power of God. Then the fire of the Lord fell. And there was a direct and immediate impact upon the people. Notice verse 39 and 40. And when the people saw it, they began to talk amongst themselves. They fell on their faces. Immediately, the people upon Mount Carmel, I don't believe the prophets necessarily, but that general population fell on their faces. And what are they saying? The Lord, He is the God. The Lord, He is the God. That's what they needed. They needed a manifestation that God was God. And it's what we need today. It brings us to the application. We'll hurry. The drought and famine during Elijah's day very much parallels our day of spiritual famine. And what we see on Mount Carmel, the people that had gathered, very much parallels our day as well. And as you look at the people gathered there on Mount Carmel, very much parallels our day. As you look at God's people upon Mount Carmel, very much parallels our day. God's people on Mount Carmel that day had been mesmerized and seduced by the world's ways. They had been dazzled by the tinsel and the gaieties and the follies and the vanities of that which was false and ruinous, and their foolish and deceived hearts were hankering after the attraction and pleasures of a world that had gone mad. And that pretty much describes most who call themselves God's people today. They were not dedicated. They were not committed to the one who redeemed them from Egypt. Elijah says to these people, how long? How long halt ye between two opinions? And it very much parallels many today. You see, these people on Mount Carmel, they had become dissatisfied with their life like many today. But they were surrounded by their worldly friends and relatives. They were bombarded with the lies of Satan. And they were afraid to alter their conduct from the gratification of self to the denying of self. They were afraid of altering their conduct from enjoying the friendship of the world to separation from the world. Afraid to alter their conduct of trifling with sin to confessing and fleeing from sin. Because they did not want to give offense to their godless companion. They did not want to bring opposition into their lives. So what do? They make sinful compromises. And they begin to deny God's claim upon their life. That describes the days in which we live. Like many of God's people who gathered upon Mount Carmel, there are masses of people today that claim to be the people of God. Yet you wouldn't know it by their lives. Their lives are not marked by God. Elijah insists upon a clear distinction. If the Lord be God, follow Him. If not, deny Him. But don't try to do both. And I think that's a great need of today as well. Is the one that saved your soul God? Then follow Him. If He's not, then don't. But make up your mind, is what Elijah is telling these people. And it's a great need of our day. Elijah is in the midst of spiritual decline and coldness. And he prays that God would manifest himself in such a way that the people's hearts would be turned back to God. Show this people that thou art God. And what we read there in verse 39, they fell on their faces and they said, "The Lord, He is the God. The Lord, He is the God." That's quite a marked contrast from verse 21. "How long halts he between two opinions?" They answered him not a word. Quite a contrast. God manifests himself as only God can. And the people immediately fall on their faces. I've seen it happen. I'm sure you have too. Someone hardened in sin. You go, you try to reason with them, you try to talk with them, you might as well talk to that wall. But then God, all it takes, and it can happen just like that. We plan, I'm going to say this, I'm going to say that, try to figure out what you're going to say to someone. What we need to do is just pray, "God, let the fire fall. Just as you did on Mount Carmel. Because until that happens, nothing's happening." People will even say, "Well, you know, I agree with you, you're right," but they don't change. And they may have said to Elijah, "You're right," or they may have thought it, "He's right," but they didn't do anything until God sent the fire down. Until God manifested that He was God. So did not the people, God's people, leave Mount Carmel that day different than they came? They certainly did. Why? Well, because they came to their senses. Well, that's true. Who drove them to their senses? God. By simply manifesting Himself. All that we would go from here today, God would show Himself in such a mighty way that everyone would go from here and say, "The Lord, He's God." Because I'm here to tell you today, there's a lot of people. There's people sitting here right now. You profess to believe that, but you don't. You don't believe that. You don't believe the Lord's God. I'm not talking to all. I'm talking to some that are sitting here. You can say all you want to that you believe He's God, but it hasn't affected your life. You're still trying to waver between Baal and God. Make up your mind. Is Baal God? Then follow Him. If God is God, then follow Him. But there are those sitting here, you don't believe that the Lord's God. "Well, Brother Dan, I'm in church every Sunday." So be it. I'm glad you are. But that does not mean that you believe in a way that it has impacted your life. He's God. He's God. He's the one who saved my soul. I gotta follow Him. They left that day. He's God. And was all the direct result of a miraculous and obvious manifestation of God. Oh, we pray that God would come down and manifest Himself to individual lives where people will look at that and say, "That's God. God did that." The people on Mount Carmel that day when that fire came down and consumed that water-soaked sacrifice and that water-soaked wood and that those water-soaked rocks and the ditch, the people said, "That's God!" And they fell on their faces. That's what we need today. A manifestation of God. That God would come down in the families, in the homes, in the individuals, and all we could say is, "That's God. God did that. He's the only one who can." And the sooner we learn that lesson, the better off we'll be. And the sooner we learn that lesson, the more we'll pray, "Oh God, show yourself for who you are." We should pray that in our own lives. Some people have to look at themselves and say, "You know what? I'm a mess. God, show yourself." We look at our loved ones, and if you're honest, you've got to say, "They're a mess. They're a mess." And we pray, "Oh Lord, fix this, fix this, fix this, fix this." I'm not saying there's anything wrong with that. But why not just pray, "Lord, manifest yourself in such an obvious and miraculous way that they just fall on their faces before Thee." That's what we need as people of God. That's what we need as a nation. For God to manifest Himself in such a way that people are driven to fall on their faces. This wasn't God acted and then people stood there for a while and said, "You know what? I ought to just fall down right now." No, that's not what happened. God acted and they fell. That's what we need today. Brother Larry, if you come and lead us in verse song.